Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Robin Christofferson.
Hey, welcome along to another Tech Talk. This is the technology show for blind and partially sighted people like you and like me. With me, as always, is my trusted compadre, Robin Christofferson's here. Hello.
That's me. Hi, guys.
Now, Robin is from AbilityNet, of course, and a fantastic organisation which does amazing work in the field of, well, you can tell us all what the field is you work in, Robin. I'm not going to do your advertising for you.
Yeah, AbilityNet, for those who don't know, is all things disability and technology. So disability with a capital D, shall we say, right through to dyslexia or learning difficulties and all areas of technology, just like the RNIB.
Yeah, absolutely. And we are proud to work together on all of this because, of course, this podcast is only possible through partnership, simply as that. We've got lots to talk about this week. We're going to be getting through your emails. By golly, Robin, have we got an inbox full to get through this week? There's just so many. We're going to be looking at the week's news. Interesting, if you are looking for information about public services, then great news because, Google and Amazon are now having lots of information available from government services here in the UK, which is good news, Robin. Finally, more accessibility out there, which, I mean, it's not accessibility in and of itself, but making this information available through smart speakers, through the gov.uk website, is going to be good news, isn't it?
Absolutely. More choice, more information.
Absolutely. So we're going to talk about that, plus lots more in the news, including Disney launching its own streaming services, but looking more broadly at streaming services in the UK and beyond. We'll be talking about that. And of course, will they all be audio described? We shall find out. That's all coming up on this week's Tech Talk, just after a very nice and very sunny bank holiday. Back to business. And we're going to get right into it then. Producer Andy's here, by the way. Producer Andy, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Did you have a nice bank holiday?
I did, yeah. Lovely weather up here in Scotland.
Yeah. What about down south, Robin? You're in London. What was the weather like? Was it gorgeous?
Glorious. Ugh. Absolutely glorious.
Let's hope it lasts.
Yes, for all of us.
Yeah.
Maybe not the Londoners. I'm only kidding, Right, let's get into the emails. So many of them.
Email. We get email. Get your email every day.
Oh, yes, we do.
Here's your mail today.
The email address is techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Lots and 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 lots. Yeah.
Leading the show with it this week.
Well, that's because there's so many, quite frankly. So we are going to kick off with your emails. Andy, what have we got?
Yeah, so continuing on from last week, we start with the email from Alan Milne, which we ended with last week. Alan goes on to discuss some other emails that we have received. He says, with regards to the comment regarding tables inside emails, I too find this frustrating and JAWS certainly does handle it a little better than VoiceOver. However, such emails are a disgrace and companies sending them should be taken to task. Tables are not, he says in capital letters, for formatting and layout. They are for tabular data content. And what is even worse is when they are nested tables inside one another, and whatever text is supposed to be there present is almost incomprehensible. This error is also widely used in web pages, and it's the result of one of two things, he says. One, it's either web developers and email template writers are poorly trained and ignorant to the fact that tables should not be used for formatting, but for semantic content. By the way, this is not an accessible thing, but part of the W3C standards for HTML. He also says the creation of email templates and even web pages is now fairly easy for anyone to do, and we also have unqualified staff creating these items that do not understand anything at all about standards or accessibility. They also happen in Word documents where inappropriate structures are used. Luckily, I am now since retired, so I don't get such documents, but I remember getting what was then, I thought, working, received a blank document that on being reviewed by a sighted colleague had loads of text actually in it. The author had used a text box centred on the middle of the page and JAWS just couldn't pick it up. He says, hope these comments are of interest. Alan Milne, which he puts in brackets, grumpy old man.
Well, I don't think you're a grumpy old man, Alan. I think you're quite right, actually. Robin, this has been a problem. We've had a number of people talking about this. You know, I've only just recently started noticing more of my emails coming through like this. I got one through last week. We're getting a new kitchen installed, and the company that are, you know, delivering the kitchen sent us an email which was in tabular form, and it meant that every single time it was reading, it was saying, row one, column one, you know, we will deliver your kitchen on. Row two, column two. You know, and it would just kind of go through this process, and you're thinking, come on, you know, get through the email. Instead, it's all in this tabular format. I mean, are you hearing about this as well?
Absolutely, and we covered this last week, but I think that if you can change the verbosity of your screen reader so that it only announces as you go into a table, as we mentioned last time, then you're going to get at least a reduction in that. But I have actually found that it's particularly tables nested within tables or irregular tables where the row and column numbers change as you go around, it's going to be hit and miss as to whether you can actually get into the cell with the data in it. And I actually find this in Excel as well. I much prefer when spreadsheets, people don't spread out the data so that it probably looks nicer, but there's lots of white space, empty cells. And there it's pretty much hit and miss as to whether you actually find the cells with the data in. So formatting is a problem. And sometimes there is a bit of a conflict between what looks nice and what is potentially accessible for screen reader users in particular. Mm. But nested tables and tables in general shouldn't be used for layout purposes. There are excellent tools that can help you lay out documents, Word documents, emails, etc., web pages in the proper way that will, when the HTML is generated by those particular tools, we'll be using style sheets, which is the right way to do it, not using tables.
Because the problem is trying to tell the company to do that, isn't it? Because if you go to a company, if you reply to the email like I got from the kitchen company, and you know, I say, I think this is a disgrace and you should fix this, you're going to get someone at the other end who doesn't have a clue what you're talking about or what this would even mean. I mean, you would hope they would forward it on to someone, but it's a bit of a challenge, isn't it?
Absolutely. And particularly with digital marketing campaigns, you know, the emails that you get, that everyone gets, or if people want to put out, you know, campaigns online by paying for Google Ads, etc., those are very ephemeral things. It's not a document that's going to be created and then lasting for a long time. So people take, you know, they're very rushed in doing those. They just want to get the messages out and move on to the next thing. So to expect them to put in extra effort to make sure that everything is fully compliant, that we have a lot of trouble working with companies who say, well, you know, this is only a one-off thing. It's only going to go out once and then it's not going to be there anymore. And you're saying that we need to do all these different things. So yeah, it comes back down to the tools. If the tools can be chosen well and used well, so that when you click save on that, you know, marketing message that you're just about to send out, it is done in an accessible way and it's, you're prompted to put alternative text in for images and that sort of thing. So yeah, it's a challenge and it will be an ongoing challenge.
Okay, let's get on to another email then.
Well, we talked about the new in-home smart displays that should be available from all of the power companies from now. As they begin to be rolled out across the country, we've had a few emails on that subject. Matthew Horsball got in touch. He says, hi, Stephen and Robin. Thanks for the interesting article on the talking in-home display. I'm chomping at the bit to get smart meters, and this just makes me even more excited about them. Just to pick up on the point about a lack of internet connectivity, I'm not an expert here, he says, but I think that it's the smart meters themselves that have to be connected to the outside world, not the IHD. And I think that somewhere that they're being used to some sort of special protocol for smart meters. Whether this is a layer on top of an existing network, i.e. 4G, or in its own wireless setup entirely, I don't know. But it explains why the IHD can receive messages even though it's not internet connected. The messages are received by the smart meter in the cupboard and then beamed across to the IHD from there. Also, he goes on to say, I'm interested in what you can tell me about SMETS 1 versus SMETS 2 meters. Am I saying that right, Stephen?
I think you are, yes. Yeah. We're talking about smart displays here.
Yes.
There's two versions of them.
He says, I know that SMETS 2 is what we should be asking for because they are better equipped to handle changes in supplier, among other things. They say that the older SMETS 1 meters would get an upgrade, but I'm not exactly sure what that means. There may or may not be hardware differences between the ones and the twos, which makes SMETS 1's devices unable to handle all of the SMETS 2 firmware.
Right, before we lose people on this, because it is quite complicated, there was a first round of these that came out, the smart displays, and the first ones that came out had a little, I think some of them had some accessibility in them, but most of them didn't, from my understanding. And what's happened is with this new version, this will have accessibility built in, which is what we heard about from the company Geo and Sam Sykes, who spoke to us a couple of weeks back on the show. That's my understanding of it, Robin. Am I right here?
Yeah, so shout out to Matthew, by the way. He's an absolute star. We should get him on the show sometime. He's absolutely right in that first part of the message about these smart meters having the connectivity, because that's how they can then avoid people having to come to the house to read the meters. So they do have internet connectivity, and the IHD, which sounds like quite a suspicious acronym, but anyway, in-home displays that we were talking about last week, they piggyback on that connectivity and are able to provide notifications from your energy supplier, etc., on the in-home display, because the connectivity is coming from the smart meter itself. So yeah, the first generation of these smart meters, the SMETS 1, had connectivity. They were smarter than the, you know, dumb meters before, but there was variation from energy supplier to energy supplier, and they weren't all compatible with each other. It was a bit like your, you know, VHS Betamax or all these Wi-Fi connected devices, systems that don't talk to each other. So we're in that kind of world. But luckily, the SMETS 2 is going to be industry standard. So if you did want to change an energy provider and you had a smart SMETS 1 meter, then it may be that your new provider also is compatible with that. But if you had a SMETS 2, then all of them will be using that same system. So yeah, you might need to upgrade.
Yeah, I think the simplest way of looking at this is that you really want to be getting the smart meter now, because, you know, the older one, forget it. You know, just don't even bother with it. I mean, they're saying the new one's coming out, summertime? That's what they're saying. But we just have to wait and see.
What's coming out in the summer is the accessible display.
Yeah.
And that will connect with all SMETS 1 and SMETS 2 meters, as I understand it. But if you're getting your meter upgraded, make sure it's a SMETS 2 one.
Which will ask for a SMETS 2.
Yep. Absolutely. So, and it also says that it is compatible with home batteries and even charging electrical cars, which take far more voltage than your average appliance. So if you've got solar panels on your roof, for example, and you want to charge a home battery, you want one of those big wall-mounted ones that then allow you to provide energy back to the grid. Or if you want to get yourself a Tesla or something and that needs to have much higher voltage, then you'll need a SMETS too.
Right, okay. Well, I'm not confused at all by that. But listen, if you are confused by it, please don't be, because I think the simplest way to look at this is get the very latest accessible in-home smart display, and just make sure you contact your supplier. Now, interestingly, we have an email that kind of follows on from this, don't we, which kind of says about the experience someone's had trying to get one of these.
Yeah, so the next one is from Charlotte, and as you mentioned, her email subject line read, "No joy with Scottish power." She goes on to say that, "Hello there, your podcast is what makes the ironing enjoyable," she says. "However, I apologise in advance because this email is mostly one long gurn. Not about you and the podcast, but about the system and its deficiencies as mentioned in your recent items on the show. First of all, I listened with great interest yesterday as you demonstrated the new talking smart meter. I have a smart meter and I've had it for some time. However, I can't tell you what happens on its screen. And although the app speaks with voiceover, as the information is given in graph form, well, that's just useless. So I decided to follow your advice and contact my energy provider, which is Scottish Power, and request to be put on a waiting list for a new accessible meter. I write," she says. "This morning, I phoned Scottish Power. All the lines were busy," well, there's no surprise there, no. "So I booked one of their returned calls and, give them their due, they phoned back at the appointed time. That's when the trouble started. When I asked about the accessible smart meter, the Wi-Fi, at the other end of the phone said that she, the wifey at the other end of the phone, she's using Glaswegian terms here, and that confused me.
Scottish thing, yeah.
Yes.
The woman, I think, perhaps.
Okay.
Yeah. The lady at the other end of the phone said that she'd never heard of such a thing, and anyway, Scottish Power didn't provide them. At this point, I had to become politely stroppy, she says. There's a new phrase for me, politely stroppy.
I like that.
And quoted Tech Talk, the piece on your podcast.
Uh-oh. And she's talking about us, though. Right. Well, nothing to do with us.
the piece on your podcast and the fact that this new meter had been endorsed by the RNIB. Still didn't get anywhere. Well, you're not pulling any punches there. So there you go. Mm. Then I said that I would be contacting Connect Radio and Tech Talk, as you guys had asked for feedback from listeners, RE, requesting these devices. I said I'll be listening to see how other people had got on with energy providers. If I discovered others would be providing an accessible meter, then I might have to change my provider, she says. The woman on the other end of the phone didn't like this. She did admit that Scottish Power had a smart team who deal with such things, but they weren't available by phone. Not very smart then. I asked why not, and I got no sensible answer. However, and I think this was offered because I had mentioned getting in touch with Tech Talk, the woman said that there was someone up the stairs who might be able to clarify things. So she was put on hold, which didn't matter as it was their call anyway. Soon she returned with the same information, or rather lack of information, as before. Scottish Power knows nothing about accessible smart meters. They do not know if they will ever be providing such things. They can't explain why no member of their smart team can be contacted by phone line, and no, Scottish Power isn't breaking the DDA RE accessibility, as they provide bills and the like in forms of a customer's choice. It will be extremely interesting to see and to hear how others get on or who have contacted their energy providers. I hope they have a more successful phone call than I did. She goes on to say, while I am in rant mode, a few words RE accessible websites. I agree, she says. App versions are often so much more accessible because they don't have the same clutter. However, often a website is the only answer. Usually I check websites for research. If ordering from home, I usually phone up. There are several reasons for this, one being the faff of passwords and the like. The other is the incident where I almost ordered 11 sets of oven gloves by mistake.
Oh, I've done that.
When ordering over the phone, I tell the person my order, and I'd also tell them that I'm blind and I only have been able to place my order because my talking computer has provided me with the relevant details. Usually, they have never heard of talking computers, although once the lady on the phone told me her boyfriend had applied for a guide dog and asked if I had one myself. On the other occasion, the person told me her teenage niece who had recently acquired a talking iPhone, which was making such a difference to the girl's life. By the way, with Braille, you don't need to memorise that long card number. Just make up a Braille version, she says. Mm-hmm. Now, do you want me to move on to the next rant, or do you want to cover the rants?
Let's cover the rants so far. Let's up to this point.
Yes. Scottish Power.
There's a lot in there. So this is nothing new. We're hearing this a lot. Although, I can say with a certain amount of confidence that it's nonsense. Scottish Power, all the energy companies, will have a version of the, will have this device available in the summer. The problem at the moment is getting that information to the front line. That seems to be the issue, Robin. It's getting the people on the front line who are answering the calls to know about it. The fact is, it is there. It's probably sitting in a warehouse right now, or at least it's being able to be ordered. There's no reason why this should be a problem, but there still seems to be cases where people, like Charlotte, are unable to get their hands on one or even just get acknowledgement that they even exist.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we need to be not making any excuses for that lady on the line, because actually they should know what know what the accessible options are for their customers.
But I'd love to just email her the press release as well. I'd love to email her the press release from RNIB and all of the energy companies who've signed this and said this is something we're going to do.
Yeah, so from a terminology point of view, the in-home display, which is the little box that you would mount on a wall, and not the smart meter, is the bit that's going to be accessible. So you want to have a smart meter, either a Smiths 1 or Smiths 2, And then that smart meter will communicate with the IHD. So if you want to grapple with them again, now, as I said a moment ago, they should know the difference. They should know all the accessibility options with regards hardware for their customers. But if you ask for a talking smart meter, for example, and they said they haven't got one, they might, strictly speaking, be telling the truth, because yes, the smart meter doesn't do the talking. It's the box. So yeah, you need a smart meter, and you need the accessible in-home display that we talked about last week.
That's what the IHD is.
Yep.
Because it does sound very technical when you say IHD, but in-home display is what it is, and we're looking for the accessible one. I mean, it does feel like some kind of password here that you need to have to make all this work. You know, it's as if when you call up these companies, if you don't use the eagle flies at night. You know, if you don't say that, then they don't. It just seems ridiculous. You're right. They should know all this.
Absolutely.
But it's not just Scottish Power. I've heard other companies, other people have been emailing in with similar experiences over the past year or so. I hope by summertime this is less of a problem. I have spoken to RNIB about this. John Worsfold is our contact here at RNIB, and he is the guy I would email constantly about this. Sorry, John, but I'm putting you out there because he said himself, get people to contact. You know, so get in touch with us here at Tech Talk. We are forwarding those emails to John at RNIB so that he is aware of this, because John works in the business team. He works with these companies, and this is a project he's been involved in for a couple of years now. So I know that we're on the case with this. The unfortunate reality is that a lot of the information, even though it's all happening, and it is all happening, it's just not getting to the front line where it needs to be. And that's quite frustrating. Now, what else was Charlotte ranting
Can I just
about?
Say,
Sorry,
just jump in on the telephone. Sometimes you do need to revert to the telephone option. I was trying to change the time and date of a blood donation appointment the other day. Went to the website. I was not getting on with what you might think would be a simple form for changing the date and time. The venue wasn't changing. It was just, you know, a simple couple of drop downs, but oh no. And it was really hard to find the number to call them. Now, sometimes, I'm not saying that the blood transfusion service do this, but some organizations hide the phone number to get in contact with them because they don't want people to go down that route. Now, I'm sure a lot of our listeners know about 195, absolutely brilliant free directory inquiry service. If you don't, then definitely sign up for that.
You've got to register for that, haven't you?
Yeah, but it's free.
Yeah.
But also the A-lady knows telephone numbers of businesses. So if you've got an Echo, just ask just try it anyway. And, you know, if she knows a number for that organization, then that's a really quick way of getting that number, and then pick up the phone, because sometimes that is definitely the quickest route.
Interesting. Okay. All right. And on the website point, I mean, I have to put out a huge well done here, because I love when companies do well. We always love to slaughter companies, don't we, when things go wrong. But, you know, you very rarely hear anything good. And DX Delivery, I think that's the name of the company, delivered something to me a couple of weeks back, and I wasn't in. Now, they left a card, which of course is inaccessible, but, you know, hey, you can have it all. Used Be My Eyes to get the number. There was like a reference number on the card to get the number, and also what to do next. Now, it involved going to a website. I'd gone to the website and was able to navigate the website successfully to re-deliver my parcel the next day, and even change the address it was going to, because I wouldn't be in. And all of that was fully accessible. So well done to them. Now, my worry with a lot of these things is that companies don't realise they've made things accessible. But that's why I'm keen to tell them. So please don't change that website ever. Okay. Right. What else is Charlotte saying?
The
mic on. We'll be here.
Hello.
We'll be here.
I'm still here. Yeah, I haven't drifted off. She goes on to say on her next rant is about AD. Audio description.
Oh, yeah.
She says, we have Sky, and I have been following Game of Thrones since the beginning, with the AD giving me all the grisly, ghastly details. No spoilers. Last night, her husband was checking the program planner, as she can't access the telemenus, don't talk, and he noticed that there was no AD symbol beside Game of Thrones, it's obviously the final season is currently on at the moment. She says, shock, horror, what was I going to do? She phoned Sky, the Sky accessibility team, and the woman on the other end of the phone answered and checked for me. No, she couldn't find the AD symbol either. She was most apologetic. She wondered if it was just a glitch and suggested that I checked, or rather the husband checked, later in the week. She also told me about the accessibility section on their website and suggested that I also checked there. I didn't know about this, but I haven't. She said she hasn't checked it yet. Too busy phoning Scottish Power.
Only so many phone calls.
So many phone calls. Surely, after goodness knows how many years, Sky hasn't abandoned AD on such a programme. Do you want to cover that?
Well, all I can say is I know that the latest episode was on last night.
Last night, yep.
And it was audio described. I don't watch it, but I did flick over to it, and there was AD on it. I will say, though, Charlotte, I have noticed on some programmes it will not say it has AD. It's happening a little bit more than I've noticed before. Some shows will not display the AD symbol, but they are audio described. Now, it's few and far between when it happens, but it does seem to happen from time to time. I'd be very surprised if Game of Thrones wasn't audio described. My worry is as well that sometimes the audio description only ever appears on the first run. You don't get it on the second or the replays that follow. Sometimes you do, but sometimes you don't. So that's often a challenge. And of course, you can't get it on demand. Don't get me started. But yeah, that's a bit of a bugbear of mine. Anyway, Robin doesn't watch telly, so we're not going to ask him.
Don't do TV.
Doesn't care about television. I'm starting to come around to your way of thinking. Honestly, I've listened to a lot of podcasts over the Easter break, and I must admit, it's nice to be able to listen to something without having to work out what's going on in the background. Yeah. Okay, let's move on to another email. Charlotte, thank you for that, and you know we will endeavour to get answers to you regarding the in-home display. But I think Robin's right. When you're calling up, ask about the accessible in-home display. The smart meter is a separate thing, but it is important you have that, because obviously that's what the in-home display connects to. Right, let's move on. What else have we got?
Following on from Stephen's comments about preferring to use the Amazon app to their website, this email is from Rod. He says, "Hi, Stephen. Well, I, for one, really hate the Amazon app."
Oh, dear.
"There are several reasons, most of which I have forgotten about. Mostly when I'm searching for and I look on a website for an item, I look at the price or whatever, the press the back button to return to my search, and then I go to another website. However, if I choose to look at what Amazon is offering, it puts me into their app, which means I then have to use the app switcher before I can go back. I always use Safari to search rather than going to a website and trawling through the menus, as it's far, far quicker. Even when I'm looking for an app that I want to download, I put App Store into my search and then the name of the app, and you land straight on the download button. It works a treat most of the time." That is an email from Rod.
Mm.
Well, I think that was a really good point. Basically, the Amazon app isn't very accessible. And for those who are familiar with the A-Lady app as well, Amazon do all of their apps basically as a web view. So it's the same HTML as from the website itself, just on a smaller screen, admittedly with the navigation and things like that cut out, but it can be quite complicated. And so, yeah, sometimes apps aren't always easier to use. And if you are surfing the web in Safari on your mobile, for example, then sometimes it will bounce you off to the app if you've got it installed, because it always wants you to use that instead. So, yeah, apps don't always equal easier. But I find the Amazon app quite doable if you can just put up with the fact that it's not very, it's usable. It's not a Rolls-Royce example of accessibility. So, yeah.
I'm quite surprised at you two, you know. Honestly, Rod and Robin here, I'm a bit confused. I actually thought that the app was reasonable enough. I mean, it's not perfect. Of course it's not. I think it's got an awful lot in it. I think that's half the problem. There's so much going on. But if you're searching for something and you go into, you know, use your rotor, I'm talking on the iPhone here, use the rotor and you go to headings, and I kind of very quickly arrow through, well, not arrow, but, you know, swipe through what I'm looking for. You know, so if I search for, I don't know, squeaky bath ducks, then, you know, that's nice and easy. I can do my squeaky bath duck search and I can just swipe down, you know, turn the rotor to headings, swipe down and all the rest, and just move through it that way. That seems to be the easiest way of doing it. On the web, I find that an absolute nightmare. No?
I totally agree. The Amazon website is far more cluttered and I would always go to the app first. But there are some issues. For example, I was buying a couple of 8-kilogram dumbbells the other day, and the one that I wanted to get just had a single dumbbell. Like anyone would want to buy one. Maybe they would, I don't know. But when you tap through on the app to the place where you can change the quantity, it wouldn't let me. on the app itself for whatever reason with VoiceOver in iOS. So I had to go to Chrome in Windows. It might have worked on the Mac in Safari, for example, I don't know. But it worked fine there in Chrome on Windows. So we live in a complicated world where sometimes, you know, an app's experience, I mean, generally speaking, I would say an app's experience is always the go-to one to check first.
But when was the last time you used it?
What, the Amazon app?
Yeah.
A couple of days ago, probably.
Okay, that's interesting. I mean, you know, look, I mean, I'm no advocate, right? I mean, you know, if you want to shop elsewhere, shop elsewhere. I'm not going to tell anyone where to go. But I thought that experience was interesting because I'm using VoiceOver on the iPhone with the Amazon app, and I'm actually finding it quite reasonable, and even changing quantities and all of that to be okay. So maybe I need to educate you, Robin.
Well, I've certainly changed quantities in the past. So whether they can choose when they're creating that kind of functionality, whether the vendor can choose what kind of pop-up or drop-down or whatever,
that,
you know, I don't know. Mm. But that particular one, I wasn't getting any joy out of it that day.
I will say one thing, though. A lot of us will know, and this is one point. I think the Amazon, and I won't say her name for obvious reasons, the Amazon Lady A app has been a bit of a bone of contention. That is the cyclist of apps for blind people, I think, because it's been up and down, it's had its accessibility issues, it's been fixed, then it was broken again, and it was terrible for a while, now it's fixed again. So yeah, obviously when they update these apps, things break, and that can be a problem for us. But yeah, I think I would still stay away from the website and choose the app over that. But hey, each their own. Rod, thank you for the email. Other people, I'm sure, I'd love to hear their comments on this. What else have we got, Andy?
This next one's from Linda. She says, "Hi, Tech Talkers, still enjoying the show. I'm just letting you know that I have used the Be My Eyes app for the very first time. I've had loads of problems with emails lately. Mozilla Firebird crashes every time I try to open an attachment, and sometimes when trying to attach a file. A real pain. I don't seem to be able to manage Outlook online or the Mail app on Windows, so I gave up and brought 365. I spent 3 hours yesterday trying to access my folders in Outlook, and I was getting rather fed up, so I decided to try Be My Eyes today. A very pleasant, patient man helped me very quickly to find my folders. He also showed me a quicker way to find my documents in Word, but I think that I must have forgotten how, because I still have to tab an arrow around to try and find what I'm looking for. I don't know about any other blind users who feel that, but bring back XP.
Oh, wow. XP?
Yeah. XP was the best. She says, "I would urge anyone who is struggling with tech or anything else for that matter to give Be My Eyes a whirl. It is better for your sanity and much better than throwing a laptop out of the window. Keep up the good work, guys. Great hearing Julie again." That's from Linda.
Yeah, well, I think avoid throwing laptops out the window. I think that's always good advice. I know that's the old joke is that's why they call it Windows, because you want to occasionally chuck it through one. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I would say I wouldn't bring XP back. I would just have kept 7 going. I thought 7 was the best.
Yeah.
I mean, people loved XP as well, don't get me wrong. And there are a lot of people out there, I know a lot of blind friends of mine who are still using XP because they like it. They obviously realise the security implications, and at some point it is going to be unavailable to them. But, you know, it is accessible, and that's the whole point, isn't it? But, yeah, it's an interesting world when it comes to accessibility at times, Robin.
So the default Mail client on Windows 10 isn't good. No. Now, there are going to be some updates to it in the 19.03 update. So Windows 10 has 2 major updates a year. And 19.03, which obviously implies that it should have come out last month, is going to be coming out in the next few weeks. You won't get it straight away, depending on your computer model, but you can go and look for it and get it sooner than you would otherwise by going to Windows Update. So the jury's out on whether that makes that more accessible or usable. But as it is at the moment, it's not very accessible. It's a bit of a toy client. So I can totally see where she's coming from and why she's using Thunderbird. Thunderbird hasn't had a lot of development done on it, and it is quite difficult to use. So Outlook, brilliant app, massively overpowered for what you necessarily want to use it for. But for email and calendaring, I really, really love it. You need to have some... there's a top list of keystrokes that will help. So Control-Y will bring up your list of folders so that you can go through those and just hit enter on the one that you want. If you want to move a email from one folder to another, Control Shift V for move will bring up the same list and you can just move it that way. Control 1 will go to your inbox, Control 2 will go to your calendar, that sort of thing. So definitely learn some keystrokes. You might have to Google a list of top keystrokes for Outlook. On the Mac side of things, if you can, then the Mail client there is really good, really inclusive. So I'd definitely go for that. Just one final tip on Word. The new versions of Word that bring up this backstage view, it's horrible. It's really, really horrible. And it comes up by default. So just ignore it. And if you want to go to a new blank document, just hit Escape. And that will go away and it will say Document 1. If you want to save or open documents without having to deal with the backstage view, then it's just F12 for save, and I think it's Control F12 for open, and you'll get the old classic dialog boxes coming up there, much, much easier to deal with. So if you don't like the way that Office 365 has that weird, complicated view, and you want to get back to the olden days, then F12's your friend.
Well, it's very interesting, Robin, that you mention all of that, because I'll be honest, I didn't know a lot of that stuff. The only thing I knew about Office 365 was that you could get rid of that nonsense menu that you get in the new Office 365, you know, and actually replace it with the classic version. But it was in settings somewhere. I found it for someone. I actually found it for a friend and then couldn't remember how to do it for me, which is often the way. But, you know, there is a way of actually turning that. What is it they call it, this new system?
Are you talking about the virtual menus in JAWS?
No. These are the menus that you get when you go in to save a document, and instead of it bringing up a classic dialog box, it brings up all
the backstage view.
That's it, the backstage. That's
well, you can tell me then, because I don't know.
Well, I do know there's a setting in there somewhere. I will find it for you for next week. Now you've mentioned it, I'm going to go and hunt for it. It's in there somewhere, because I think that would be quite good if people can just turn it off. Not so sure about the Mac side of it. I know you can do it on the Windows side, although I'd assume if you can do it on Windows, you can do it on Mac as well. Although I don't think Mac has that issue, from my understanding. But anyway, you can tell us your thoughts. TechTalk@rnib.org.uk. People do love to be sending in their emails. I want to go now to an audio interview, an audio email, I should say, that we got in. This is from Ashley, who got in touch with us. Ashley McCrae.
Hey, Tech Talkers, just figured I'd email in with an audio this time. Guess what, people? I took your advice on it. I got a new job promotion, and to celebrate, I bought myself a brand spanking new Kindle Fire 10.1. But I do have a couple of questions on it. Number one, like applications. There are a couple of applications that I saw were not actually available on it. Not even GroupMe is available. I use that a lot. But I did see that Facebook and Twitter and Skype and all that, they were available. Can you give me a list of maybe some apps that do work with the Kindle Fire? And they have to be accessible. Thank you.
Ah, well, there's a tricky one. Accessible apps on the Kindle Fire. Do you have one of these, Robin? Have you got a Kindle device? Kindle Fire tablet?
No, not a talky one. No. Mm.
Well, I've got to say, I am. This is one of these devices. Now, because I use an iPad all the time, I don't use the Amazon Kindle Fire. I don't think they call it that anymore, do they? They call it the Amazon Fire tablet.
Yeah.
I don't use it enough, but when I do go to it, I do find it a really nice device, especially for reading books, especially for checking out certain apps. I'll be honest with you, the experience on it is a little bit hit and miss. I mean, Ashley's right. You get Facebook and you get Twitter on there, and you know, you get lots of the apps that you would get on Android devices that are fine. What I would say, though, is if you're looking for accessible apps, I would look for lists of Android apps. Very difficult for me just to rhyme off a list of apps, because they may not have no interest to you whatsoever. But what you may find is that if you're looking for accessible apps, find out if they're accessible on Android first, because essentially that's the apps you're downloading. Even though it is a Kindle, I'm calling it Kindle Fire. Now it's, you know, a Fire tablet. It runs off an Android software. That's what Fire OS, Fire Operating System, is. So it's actually running off Android software. The apps themselves are the same ones that you'll get on the Google Play Store. In fact, you can even, and I did this, you can actually download the Google Play Store onto the Fire tablet. You don't need to use its own Amazon App Store. which would let you download apps, and that gets you access to even more apps. And so if you're finding that you can't find certain things, but you know they're available on Android, but they're not available through the Amazon App Store, download the Google Play Store, and you get access to much more there. So there are ways to get apps. In terms of accessibility, it is, again, hit and miss. It depends on what you're looking for. There are some real benefits to using Android over Apple devices, for sure. The one that always sticks out in my mind is the ITV Player, or ITV Hub, I think it's called now, because it's the only app you can get audio-described TV programs from ITV on. Not on Apple, but on Android. And you can get that, obviously, on your Fire tablet as well. Very bizarre. But you can also download Microsoft Office apps on there. You could download a whole pile of them. And they are accessible to a point. I think productivity apps, Robin, in general, across devices, can be a little bit of a challenge if you're not using a keyboard.
Yeah, now I'm not an Android expert. I would have thought that the built-in equivalents to a word processor and mail and calendar and that sort of thing should be fine. But obviously it's those additional bits of functionality that you want. So yeah, just go and have a look at your, whatever your favorite app of choice is, do a web search for Google accessibility of that app and see what you get.
Yeah, absolutely. Let us know how you got on and tell us the apps that you find most useful. I will say that the Fire tablet for me was very much a leisure device, not what I would call a productivity device. I know that might be screaming hatred at everyone who's bought
device.
One. I think it's one of those things you'd maybe watch Netflix on. It's maybe one of those things you'd maybe check Facebook on. I don't know if it's the kind of device you want to sit down and write your novel on.
I would put iPad in that category as well, though, to be honest. Well, I think you can do a lot on iOS, but for me, if I'm needing to be productive, then I would turn to a keyboard, either yes, by attaching one to an iOS device or by going over to a PC.
My iPhone with my Bluetooth keyboard is probably the most productive I can be next to an actual computer. But, you know, I tend to be in the old guard on this. I actually like a computer. I like to sit down at a machine and get stuff done rather than trusting tablets and all the rest. And the main reason being because when you use VoiceOver, you get real issues with focus, you know, where the screen will move around or something on the screen will change. I mean, like, for example, I was typing something in Notes the other day and I got a notification. So the notification takes focus. So it's telling me, I think you'd text me saying, you know, where are you? What's going on? You know, why has everything gone wrong? Which is usually the line we use around this show a lot. And, and you know, the problem was I couldn't get back to where I was because it had taken focus and then lost where it was. Which I guess in a lot of ways, the iPad accessibility works like my brain. I get distracted by something over here and then I can't get back to where I was over here. So anyway, there we go. Tell us your thoughts. Right, Andy, let's get another email.
So the next one is from Bal. He says, your suggestion about switching off columns and rows in VoiceOver settings has worked for me on the iPhone and the iPad. I get no more clutter announcements of rows and columns now. It's been made an immense difference in listening to emails. So he says thank you to Robin for your help.
Oh, there you go.
That's
Robin.
From Bell.
Brilliant. Yeah, glad we were of assistance by that tip last week.
Right, what else?
The next one's from Damien. He says, hi, Steve, and all crazy nerds.
Now, that'll be us then.
Is that everyone?
Yes.
If you're into tech adventures, I strongly recommend that you try the latest Microsoft Edge with Chromium Engine. My first impression is that it merges all good things from Edge and Chrome. It looks very accessible, like a Chrome, or like Edge with no annoying user interface. And it works very well with Narrator as well. Happy testing from Damien, he says.
Okay, I haven't tested this. Have you heard about it?
Yes, so Microsoft spent 3 years trying to get back into the browser game. IE obviously was dominant for a long time, but it was absolutely awful. So they tried to usurp that or kind of get a better player in the game with Edge. And it had its own rendering engine called Edge ML, and it wasn't very good. And everybody hated it, and they very belatedly brought support for screen reader access, and it was still quite challenging. And about 6 months ago, they threw in the towel and they said, okay, we're not going to bother. They had something like 3% market share by that point. So they threw in the towel and they went over to Chromium, everybody's favorite rendering engine that obviously Chrome uses. It's open source, so they wouldn't have to pay anyone anything for it. Everyone thought that was a better idea. So Edge now uses Chromium, and a lot of people are calling it Credge unofficially.
That's horrible.
You know, move over to Credge. And if you like Chrome and it works for you, then there's absolutely no need to avoid using Edge or Credge, because it's going to form a lot of Windows 10 in the update that I mentioned earlier. Every time you need to enter a password or something pops up that feels a bit HTML-y, a bit webby in Windows, that will now use a different engine, and we'll all feel the benefit, because it was really challenging. Just even changing your password in Office, for example, it would dump you out into a little web view, and that wasn't accessible. So there have been problems. They're all going to go away. Have a play with it if you want to. I think you have to be on the insider's ring to be able to download it. I don't think it's publicly available yet, but you can easily join the insider's ring by going into the updates section in settings if you want to have a play.
Okay. So if I'm using Chrome right now, and I am, I like Chrome on the PC, I don't need to bother with this Microsoft Edge. There's no need for it. Because, I mean, I'm thinking of all my passwords and everything I've got stored in there already. I don't want to have to move all that over to something else. But if I was deciding to move to Edge or use Edge more, will it be more accessible with JAWS? Because that's the big question, isn't it? That was the big problem for first year when Edge came out, that JAWS wouldn't work with it.
Yeah, absolutely. So JAWS will definitely work with Credge, and a lot
Terrible
of the extensions, a lot of the plugins that people might be using with Chrome are slowly being ported over to Edge. So if there are particular plugins or extensions that you need to use for your daily work, then that might be a reason not to go over to Edge yet. What would be a reason to go over to Edge is that very same thing, which is that because there's so many things that it doesn't support yet, chances are it will run a lot better, because it will run faster until you start bringing all of those extensions and plugins in. So if you've been using Chrome for a long time and you've been adding things that you might have even forgotten about now, they might be seriously impeding the performance of Chrome. And Chrome is notoriously battery hungry, and Microsoft are trying to address that in this one. So there might be some reasons to go over. Talking about passwords and things, if you are using Chrome, chances are you're using a Google account, and it's remembering all your passwords and it's saving it to Google. And so everywhere else that you use Google, those passwords just pop up, which is fantastic. If you go over to Edge, you will be logging in with a Microsoft account, which, so long as you switch to Edge everywhere else, and there is a version of Edge for iOS and Android soon, then those usernames and passwords will pop up there as well. But chances are Google will be a bigger player in your life across all of your devices than Microsoft is at the moment. So that might be something else to consider.
I mean, it's something we'll talk about in the future, but, you know, I'm using the Mac a lot more. And one of the joys of using the Mac is that capability to transition between devices and yet have the same experience across them all. And one of those is passwords. Because obviously, if you've got your password saved on your phone, that is going to be available on your Mac through Safari and all of that. So it does make the whole thing a lot easier. I guess that would be the same with Google, say Chrome, and also if you've got a Google or Android phone, you'd have similar experience there. So that kind of unity approach is good. Right, look, we'll leave it there for the emails, because we could go on and on, but because we get so many emails through, but we will get to more of your emails next week. Andy, thanks for coming in with those.
No worries at all. I'll see you next week.
You will.
Thanks, Andy.
Time for this.
News from the internet.
And we're going to kick things off by talking about Google and Amazon. We seem to be talking about them quite a lot this show, but their smart speakers are in the news because a lot of government information has been made available. Right, don't fall asleep over there, because this is important. Yes, government information, public information. Now, I don't mean like Charlie Says, and you have to be a certain age to know what I'm talking about, as Charlie Says, but, you know, the kind of public information, things that we want to know, like, for example, tell me what the minimum wage is, or how can I apply for a new passport, or a whole wide range of different things. Even, you know, we've just had an Easter weekend. When's the next bank holiday? You know, all of that is now going to be made available through smart speakers. And the good thing about this, Robin, is you don't have to enable a skill to do it. You can just ask Lady A or the Google Home.
Yes, and the government have obviously been cooperating, collaborating with Google and Amazon to do this. Now, I don't know when they mean this to be going live, because I, before we started recording today, asked the A lady several things. When is the retirement age? And she said, I found this on Wikipedia. So I'm pretty sure that that's not the how it should be when, you know, when this announcement has taken effect. And I asked, well, how do I renew a passport? And they found something from WikiHow. So she's coming back with answers, but I don't think that's the experience that we're going to get. I think we're going to get something that is far more unified. The other examples that you mentioned there, and there are so many more, about how you might want to query or question government services, public services, taxation, benefits, all that sort of thing. And so to just be able to ask your smart speaker and get a concise answer that isn't randomly pulled from a number of different sources, which is basically how she works at the moment, would be a really good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like a really good story. It's something I'm very keen to hear more about, and something we'll definitely be demoing here. It sounds like something that'll appear in the Dot to Dot podcast, maybe, Robin? I'm just
definitely
guessing. Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, we'll hear more about that as it comes. Also, we saw this week, in fact, last week, actually, Disney have announced their new streaming service, imaginatively titled Disney Plus. I think that's the future now, basically. We'll just stick plus at the end of everything and people will feel like we're getting more. So next week it's Tech Talk Plus. No. Disney Plus, though, is going to be a new streaming service which is going to feature lots of interesting content, including apparently every single episode ever of The Simpsons, and lots more shows as well. Lots of stuff that Disney do that a lot of people might not realise. All the Marvel stuff is Disney. They own Fox now as well, so that's where The Simpsons come from. So lots and lots of shows on there. The question is, will any of it be audio described? And will you watch any of it, Robin? Of course you won't.
I think I've watched at least two episodes of The Simpsons.
No way.
So, yeah, I know what you're talking about. I don't know. Maybe. It depends how much it's going to cost and what it has there. And like you say, whether it's got AD. Now, I know I've mentioned before that I don't like the visual mediums, because they, even with AD, you don't feel like you're getting the full picture. Excuse the pun, but you know, maybe. I mean, I was actually listening to the audio version of a film. It was Aliens the other day, with the audio description, and the lady was talking over all the dialogue. So you can even, you know, there are variations even when AD is present, and I found that really frustrating. So yeah, hopefully they'll all have AD. Disney's got quite a good track record in this area, and hopefully it'll be done well as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we watch with interest on all of this, but I want to just sort of expand this out a little bit, because of course streaming services are now a big part of our lives now. Sarah Nightingale is here to talk about how services like Disney and others are changing the way we watch television.
With most people working 9 to 5, constantly commuting, socialising and sleeping, we have come to need a far more customisable way to consume TV and films. That's where streaming and catch-up services like Netflix and BBC iPlayer come in. In the last few years, the amount of people subscribed to these services has grown exponentially, with reportedly more than 3 in 5 Brits signed up to Netflix. In particular, it's the younger generations who are binging all that streaming has to offer, watching 2 hours and 37 minutes of content online a day. We've weighed up the pros and cons of some of Britain's favourite streaming services so that you don't have to. In 2007, Netflix launched a service that would change the face of TV and film forever, the streaming service. Hitting Britain in 2012, the platform quickly grew to hit 9.78 million UK subscribers by the end of 2018. Over time, Netflix has built up an index of quality content, even making their own award-winning shows. In terms of quality, they comfortably rank highly, and with a starting cost of £5.99, are very user-friendly. The only downside? Screen limitations. If you want to watch more than one screen at a time, the monthly cost will be slightly higher. Having conquered the retail market, Amazon launched their own video streaming service in the UK in 2014. As of 2018, Instant Video had 4.8 million UK households subscribed to its services. Much like Netflix, Amazon have made a leap beyond presenting high-quality content to producing it themselves. With series like The Grand Tour, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and Sneaky Pete, that platform is a definite competitor for top spot. They also offer the option to purchase an annual pass and save at £79 for the year, or a monthly fee of £7.99. A great pro here is the additional benefits of Prime Delivery. However, the limited film content is a definite con. Who wins on video streaming? On value, the winner is definitely Amazon Prime, because of its many additional benefits that come with the video streaming service. However, on content, Netflix is the clear winner, with a vast library of constantly updating original and non-original TV and film. So whether you're all about the latest series or more enticed by good value video content, there's a streaming service out there that will help you fit your watching around your schedule, not the TV guide.
So there you go, Sarah Nightingale, looking there at TV options for streaming. Of course, audio description is another ball game entirely when you mix it in, because clearly the winner there is Netflix, with all of its original content and lots of other content that it's brought in with audio description. I'd say much more than what is on Amazon Prime, unlike in the US, bizarrely, Robin, where in the US they get much more AD content than we do here.
Yeah, and it's so frustrating that the files already exist. The work has been done, but it's to do with, you know, licensing or whatever it is. They just don't make their way over the pond. So yeah, that's a shame. Funnily, I see Amazon Instant Video as being the side product to Prime. I primarily have Prime so that we can get things the next day.
Yeah,
I mentioned about dumbbells earlier on. At 10:30 last night, through the A-Lady by voice, I ordered some protein powder and it's coming today. So that to me is worth the yearly subscription just to get. I know Amazon is evil and is killing the high street. I know all that. I'm really, really sorry. Please don't send me email.
But it's so easy.
The convenience. I know. So yeah, I think that Amazon has got it sussed, and the instant video side of things is just the icing on the cake.
Yeah, absolutely. Just one final point then on Be My Eyes, launching support for Halifax, Bank of Scotland and Lloyds as well. You can find out more about that on the Be My Eyes app. Go to Specialised Help. Robin, that is it. We're out of time. Thank you so much for being with me once again. We're going to do it all again next week. We'll be talking to Thomas Dormville next week and getting a review of the Voice Dream Scanner app. Looking forward to that. For now, though, Robin, thank you.
Thanks, guys.